So if Soto's a 30 home run hitter and he's hitting 290, but he's stealing like five bases, that's really solid, and it puts him at the top of this tier, which is where I have him. So that's kind of the thinking. I love Juan Soto. I think he's great long term. I mean, he was so good last year that he could prove me very wrong. Welcome to episode 185 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus podcast. We are doing, as we've been doing for the last few weeks, the recap of our tiers at Baseball Prospectus, and this is outfield week. And usually I say, as always, with me is Zach Steinhorn, but tonight we have a very special, I don't want to say guest, we have a very special return to the podcast. It's Brett Sayre.
Hey guys, I'm back.
He's back. I was going to do your whole, you know, president and, you know, all that wonderful stuff, but Brett's back.
None of that's important. I'm back. That's
yeah. We're so happy to have you back, Brett. Brett, how are you doing?
I am wonderful. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. Before I get too excited, we also, as always, have Jim Mark Ramos of the BP Stats team behind the glass, doing the producing and doing the awesome job that Jen has been doing. So just to remind everybody, as I said, we're right in the middle of our fantasy baseball content. We've about 20, 21 articles a week. The Baseball Prospectus annual is out. You know, please go to Amazon.com and, you know, other places that you can buy it and buy the book. I'm in the book. Brett's in the book with comments and, you know, editing. And, you know, as always, as I like to say, you know, rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher and all those great places you can rate and review us. They do help. So let's dive in. Let's just get right started with the outfielders, because it's a really long group. You know, we usually do about 30 players at the other positions. There are 75 outfielders here. We're not going to talk about every single one. Let's just start with the five stars. So we nearly doubled the five star tier this year. There are 10 outfielders in this tier, and they are Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez, Ronald Acuna, Christian Yelich, Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton, who I almost called Mike, Charlie Blackmon, Aaron Judge, and Starling Marte. So Brett, as an overview here, do you agree with 10? I mean, I know it's a thick group. Do you feel like maybe it's a little too heavy, or do you feel that outfield is richer and thicker at the top this year?
It is definitely richer and thicker at the top. And as we go through the episode, we'll find out that there's an, you know, equal but opposite reaction at the bottom of the outfield. But there are a lot of really, really exciting names, and it goes well beyond Trout and Betts to start things off. But I actually have a question for you that I want to pose with regards to the five star guys. I'm with you on all of them. On what date, if Bryce Harper hasn't signed, would you consider him a four-star outfielder?
Oh boy, I mean, April. I you're talking about signed. I'd say April 1st or opening day is when suddenly I'm worried that he's missing, you know, 2 to 4 weeks. You know, we were talking before about Francisco Lindor and his injury, and I'd say the safe estimate, he's going to miss a couple weeks and he might not steal as many bases. That'd kind of be my concern with Harper. Base running isn't nearly as big a part of his game, but if he does come in late and he's a little rusty, I could just see a situation where he doesn't run because his new team doesn't want to risk injury. It is a weird situation. There is a possibility. I didn't think this, you know, a couple months ago. There's a possibility that Harper and Machado are not signed or not ready, at least by opening day.
Yeah, which is, I There's a possibility. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's definitely a possibility. I wonder whether if we start getting into like the second week of March and he's not signed, I'm going to start to pretty notably downgrade him for the 2019 season. And this is mostly just because I do believe that players need, for the most part, reasonably full spring trainings in order to really get warmed up for the season. We've seen this in a couple of different ways. We've seen this with injured players who have either gotten, who've like started camp maybe in mid-March. We've seen it with people who have signed late. I mean, so we've seen it with people who have signed late, but they've all been well less notable fantasy players than Harper and Machado, clearly. But a lot of instances of players who come to camp late and end up really just not being themselves throughout most of the first half. And, even a sort of weak first half, strong second half Harper, I don't think I'd rather have that than Rhys Hoskins or Andrew Benintendi, or even say like George Springer. There is going to be that point for me. I'm wrestling with where that point is, and I don't like that I have to do that. It's really bumming me out.
Well, and that's kind of where, Harper hasn't been quite an elite player. Like he's ranked here because of that potential. He has that potential. We all know he has the potential to do it in 2015, to be a $40 player, to be a top two or three player. And we're paying somewhat for that potential. He's ranked below some of these other names because he might not get there, and we know that. But you're absolutely right, Brett. I'd say that if he misses some of spring training, then you're not only paying for potential, you're paying for potential and some rustiness and missed time. So I'd say it's astute. I'd say at some point he has to go down to like, four or five names down in the four-star tier. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it is unfortunate, but we have a lot of other not unfortunate names to talk here.
I mean, do we really, need to talk about Mike Trout or Mookie Betts at all? They're the clear one to overall. Like, would you consider Betts over Trout, or is Trout still pretty much number one? Okay,
no, I would consider it. I think they're really close, but I mean, you don't need to listen to a podcast to know that they're both really fucking good.
Yeah, so. I mean, honestly, if someone takes Betts over Trout, you're not going to be like, oh, okay. Like I saw it on an FBC draft that someone took Christian Yelich number one, and I was like, well, that's a little much.
That I wouldn't do.
since I mentioned Yelich, does he come close to last year? Was there a lot of helium in the second half? Is he really a first rounder, or is some of this, I know you feel about Yelich, but is some of this people paying for last year, which was a career year?
No, he's definitely a first rounder, and there's definitely some of people paying for last year. I think it's hard to overstate the jump in contextual factors when you go from the 2017 Marlins to the 2018 Brewers. And I think that some of the performance was a little overstated from last year, but I mean, if you give him about 85% of his performance in batting average and homers, you're still looking at someone who's, someone who might hit 310 with 30 homers. And that is still definitely a first round pick, especially when that person also is a really good bet to steal double digit bases.
Well, that's the other thing I'd point out too, which is Zach and I had Yelich in labor. We traded for him. And when he went on that power streak, he stopped running. So if he doesn't quite hit as many home runs, he's probably good for like five or six more steals.
Yeah. He's one of those guys where he can do what you want him to do in any of those categories. You just don't know exactly what shape his production is going to take. I wouldn't be shocked if next year he was closer to 20 homers, but closer to 30 steals. I mean, he can do that. He has the talent to do it. I just don't, you don't what you don't want to do is expect, you know, a 320 average with 30 homers and 30 steals, because that's bananas. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, that would be the mistake. It would be extrapolating the second half and saying he's going to. I mean, it's a mistake with anybody, and saying that he's just going to double it. You know, we know that that's not the norm there. So let me ask you, besides Trout and Betts, you know, is there somebody here in this? Well, actually, I'll ask this the other way. Besides Harper, is there someone in this tier that you'd be wary of at this price, where you'd be like, yeah, I don't really want to pay the going rate? You know, even if he's good, there's just people I'd rather have, whether it's at outfield or another position.
Yeah, and it's Giancarlo Stanton.
I knew you were going to say it, but I had to ask.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I don't want to fall into the trap of kind of carrying forward his reputation as an injury-prone player, because he has played in, you know, 158 and 159 games respectively in the last 2 years. But you also don't just get rid of that reputation after staying healthy for two seasons, especially as you get older. And you know, the truth is that he played a full season last year and didn't hit 40 home runs. You know, that was the deal with Stan, right? Is that if he stayed healthy for 160 games, he was going to hit 50 homers. And he did in 2017. But he most definitely did not last year, and his strikeout rate spiked. And I am concerned that there is not going to be positive regression the other way. He had 211 strikeouts last year, which, by the way, can I just say that I love the fact that he has 211 strikeouts in 2018, and it's not even black ink on his baseball reference page. It's,
yeah, well, I love the fact that no one really talks about strikeouts anymore for hitters as a significant detriment, you know, unless it's like a Yoan Moncada and someone who's that high up the chain. I always felt strikeouts were somewhat overrated, and from a hitting perspective, and now we're past that, just the acknowledgement that pitchers can pitch, and that's just the way the game is.
It is, but 211 strikeouts is not it's not quite where the game is, especially.
No, I mean, he's a high strikeout guy. And to your point, yeah, 20-30% or right below 30% three of the last 4 years. And to your point, that's who Giancarlo Stanton is. He's going to strike out. I'm a little sunnier than you are on him, but I do, you know, if you look at two of his last three seasons. You know, his DRC plus 2017 is the outlier. He's a really good hitter, but I do agree with you. If you're paying, expecting 50 plus home runs, then you're in for a bad time.
Oh yeah, I think the batting average has the potential to get uglier than this. I mean, he had 333 BABIP last year, which. His, you know, previous 3 years before that were 294, 290, 288. That's pretty strong consistency right there. I don't think that 333 is a jump.
Yeah. Well, and it's a weird thing too. You know, Yankee Stadium is a smaller park. Actually Miami helped him in terms of balls falling in because it was a larger park. You know, Yankee Stadium is smaller. The ball's either going out or it's getting caught in a lot of cases, particularly if it's a pop-up or a fly ball. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. He could hit 240. I kind of see more of the same from last year, like 260, 265. But it certainly could happen. I think we agree on Stan. You're down on him more than I am. But I'm not on the, you know, he's definitely going to pop back up to 50-plus home runs.
Yeah, and to, you know, even with that said, I wouldn't move him out of the five-star tier. I don't disagree with him being in the five-star tier. I would definitely take Aaron Judge over him, but that's more personal preference.
Yeah, I have them pretty close. So is there anyone else in this tier, you know, just because these are a lot of obvious names, is there anyone you want to talk about in depth, or should we move on to the four-star?
I think we can move on to the four-star, unless you want to sing the praises of Starling Marte.
No, I mean, you know, I really like him. I don't think we need to go further into it. He's my value pick in this series, so you can read about him tomorrow. You know, the point I think I made was, you know, if there were three 20-30 players last year, and it was Betts, Jose Ramirez, and Marte. Obviously, those first two players are much better, but Marte in the third round, which is about where he's going, is still a pretty nice pick for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the four-star tier, a little bit bigger, but not so much. Well, the three-star is where I'll be reading names off super fast. The four-star, Juan Soto, Rhys Hoskins, Tommy Pham, Andrew Benintendi, Justin Upton, who I keep wanting to call Melvin, and now it's back to BJ, George Springer, another player, Cody Bellinger, I almost say his father's name, like I don't know how many times, Lorenzo Cain, Michael Conforto, Marcell Ozuna, who I spelled Osuna in the email I sent to everybody, Malik Smith, Yasiel Puig, Mitch Haniger, Nick Castellanos, and Joey Gallo.
Yeah, I was worried you were really high on Jose Ozuna.
Yeah, I make mistakes in these emails and internal things almost every year, and they're just kind of funny. I think 1 year, instead of Carlos Santana, what back when he's a catcher, I put Carlos Martinez, and Ben Carsley was like, what? Like, and I'm like, yeah, I just, never mind, it's January, and I'm the cobwebs are still, you know, in my brain. So, Brett, who is there anyone you want to start with here? Any general thoughts about the tier?
Why don't we start at the top? Why is Juan Soto not a five-star outfielder for you?
Well, there's a couple reasons. I think for the first reason is without speed or without like 15 to 20, you know, steals, it's difficult for me to put somebody in that tier who isn't going to be like on the Judge and Stanton and J.D. Martinez side of power. Could Soto get there like in 3 or 4 years? Yes, he's a terrific hitter. I feel like the projections where I see him now, which is like upper 20s, low 30s, is kind of fitting. So if Soto's a 30 home run hitter and he's hitting 290, but he's stealing like five bases, that's really solid. And it puts him at the top of this tier, which is where I have him. So that's kind of the thinking. I love Juan Soto. I think he's great long term. I mean, he was so good last year that he could prove me very wrong. You know, the other side of this, though, with a 20-year-old hitter, we've seen this. You know, we saw this with Bryce Harper. There's a lot of up and down in young players, and I'm not saying he'll have a down year, but if it happens, it wouldn't surprise me.
There is. I specifically wanted to see what you would say there. I don't think he needs to be a five-star guy. I think he's basically a four. I think he's the 4.5-star guy. I think there's more upside in the power than I think some people think.
I agree.
And I also think there's more upside in the batting average than some people think also. I don't think it's going to happen together. I don't think, you know, just like Yelich, like I don't think Soto is going to hit, you know, 310, 320 with 35 homers, but I think either one of those two numbers is attainable. He is a generational talent at the plate. He is just phenomenal. And I really, you know, outside of the stolen bases, which you're right about, I would not put much by him at the plate.
I mean, if Soto, if you told me at the end of this year that Soto had earned or finished as a top 15 player, I wouldn't be surprised, like based on the talent. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Is there anyone here in particular that I'm curious about besides Soto or kind of want to talk about? So I want to get your thoughts on Andrew Benintendi. So, you know, Benintendi is a player to me who, you know, really obviously heck of a hitter. I really like watching him. You know, great all around player, stud or potential stud in real life. I guess my question for you, you know, 16 home runs, 21 steals, 290 average. Do you feel like there's some improvement coming for Benintendi, or do you look at his numbers and think, well, you know, this is pretty much and they're good numbers, but like this is pretty much what we're going to see from him going forward.
Yeah, I think what you're paying for with Benintendi is the floor. I think he's about in that 4-star tier. He is definitely as much of a lock to be basically a 275 hitter with 20 homers and 20 steals as anyone else. I don't think he's really got the what did Benintendi earn last year? Somewhere around like 25, 26 bucks?
It was like upper 20s, and I pointed out in the article that he was the 10th best outfielder last year in mix. So yeah, I mean he's right there in terms of earnings, and that's some of the appeal, which is he does everything, and he's on a great team too, which even if he only hits 270, the runs and the runs batted in are gonna be there.
Yes, definitely. I don't think he stands really much of a chance at all of being a top five outfielder. But barring injury, I have a hard time seeing him not being a top 20 outfielder, which is a nice place to be, especially so in deeper leagues and, in AL only and deep mix leagues. Benintendi is a guy who you can push a little bit for the safety.
Mm-hmm. So the speed guy that we have here, we've had Billy Hamilton in this tier in the past. I know you're of your love of Billy Hamilton. The player we have here this year. We'll get to Billy Hamilton. I'm sure we usually have like a 10-minute conversation about him every year. But so the 4-star speed guy this year is Malik Smith. Malik Smith last year, he was drafted really low. It seemed like he'd be a fourth outfielder, even after Corey Dickerson was traded. And, Malik Smith was really good. Do you believe in Malik Smith? Do you feel like he's okay here at this price? Or would you rather wait? Would you rather be like, you know what? I know you believe in taking speed if it's worth taking, Brett. But would you wait on someone else as opposed to taking Smith at in this group?
No, here's my hot take. I'd rather have Billy Hamilton than Malik Smith in 2019.
That's fair. Especially, let me ask you, is that price or just period?
No, period.
Oh, that is a hot take.
Mm-hmm. Malik Smith is fine. I don't think he's a 300 hitter. I think he's more of a 275, 280 hitter, probably tops. And I don't think he's that elite of a base stealer. He played almost a full season last year and stole 40 bases, but he was caught 12 times. He's not elite in the way that you expect a top line guy who's basically a one category player to.
We know comps are bad, but the player he reminds me of from that perspective, and I'm looking at his numbers to, of course he was faster than that, but he reminds me of Michael Bourne. Now I know Bourne stole in the 60s a couple times, but he's a type of player. He's someone where I don't necessarily trust the average. There's obviously no power, and you probably are looking at like a 45 steal ceiling. So yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, I feel like Smith should be okay, but he's not necessarily someone in this group that I'm like, yeah, like I'm psyched to get him. He's more somebody at the price he's at, or if he's the price I like, I'm like, okay, I'll take him. He's not somebody that I'm expecting to earn 30.
Yeah, there's nothing inherently wrong with Smith. I'm certainly not afraid of speed only guys. I just don't think Smith provides either the safety that you want out of someone you would take in this group in the 4-star tier, or the upside. I don't think he's going to steal 55 bases. I don't think there's much chance of that at all. And I think there is at least a little risk that he kind of falls off the table a little bit. I mean, if he ends up hitting he hit 296 last year. If I think his true talent is closer to 270, 275, If he, you know, if the BABIP gods reverse and he's a 245, 250 hitter, I mean, does he even necessarily play every day? I mean, it's Seattle. They've got nobody there now, and Jerry DePoto will trade for five center fielders before the end of the season. But
yeah,
he probably will. But again, you have to think about it, right?
Yeah, I mean the Pecota or the Pecota projection, 8 home runs, 34 steals, 247. You know, a little more pessimistic than some of the other models, but not really that much more so. You know, which kind of does, you know, it does raise that point that even at 260 and 35 steals, that's solid, but it's not necessarily something that you're expecting growth for. And I mean, the one pro about Seattle and if they are bad is that, yes, Smith could sit. The other side of it is he could just play and play no matter what. And he could be like, you know, Billy Hamilton, where he does, or, you know, a poor person's Billy Hamilton, where he hits like 235, 240, but steals 50 bases just because they run him and run him. I don't see that happening, but that's kind of the bad team theory, which is, it'll be interesting when we get to Billy Hamilton. But I should stop teasing the show and getting excited, Brett. So
this is true.
Other players in this tier. So does Joey Gallo have a chance at hitting, like, you know, we talked about Stanton. Does Joey Gallo have a chance at, like, reaching into the upper echelon in home runs?
Yeah. He absolutely does.
Can he hit more than like 209 or whatever it was he hit?
Yeah, yes. So he can. I think his ceiling is probably about 230.
Okay.
230 and, you know, 230 and 40 to 45 home runs is pretty good. You know, and we're talking about end of the four star tier here. I think that the expectation for Gallo, I mean, he's now hit 40 home runs two seasons in a row, and not with complete playing time either. I mean, the Rangers are going to be bad, and they have absolutely no incentive to platoon Gallo. They have absolutely no incentive then to do anything but give him all the at-bats he can handle to try to, you know, coax him into being you know, the middle of the lineup god that they think he can be. And, you know, he's had 449 at bats and 500 at bats the last 2 years, and some of that is lowered a little bit because he does walk up, you know, a decent amount. But, you know, if he ends up getting 550 at bats instead, you know, I don't think 50 home runs is out of the question. But no, he's never going to be, we rarely say never when it comes to a rate stat, because rate stats are wholly unpredictable in smaller sample sizes. But Joey Gallo is not going to hit 260. That said, I don't think he's necessarily condemned to being a 200 to 210 hitter either. So.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out too, you know, and I point this out in more than a few places, the median batting average has dropped. So, you know, don't get me wrong, Gallo's, you know, 206 last year was still bad, but it's not like a few years ago when, you know, the median, like, league average was 260, and, you know, when it's 240, 247 or 250, you're not nearly taking the hit that you were a few years ago. And again, I'm not sugarcoating this. That's a bad average, but the game has changed a little bit from that perspective. So again, it was a big tier. I don't want to rush through this, but is there anyone else here or any other players here that you want to kind of talk about?
Yeah, really quickly. I would not let Michael Conforto or Marcell Ozuna slip too far in drafts.
Oh, I love Conforto. Ugh.
Both of them had slightly down seasons in 2018, and it can, you know, basically be explained away. I think Conforto has a good chance to do what even the most bullish on him think he can do, and you know, hit 270 to 280 with 30 plus homers. I think that's well within reach. Marcell Ozuna had really struggled with his shoulder last year. If he's healthy, people have very short memories when it comes to certain players. And in 2017, Ozuna hit 312 with 37 homers in Miami. St. Louis, much better place to hit than Miami, and a healthy Ozuna, well, I think 2017 will probably go down as his career year. But the batting average stayed stayed elevated. He had been, basically consistent 260 hitter before 2017 and ballooned up to 312. But he hit 280 last year, even while struggling with injury. I think there's a reasonable chance that he could go out there and hit 300 with close to 30 home runs. And it feels like people are sleeping on him, and they shouldn't be.
Yeah, I agree. I people are forgetting the shoulder and just writing him off. And it feels to me like he's better than that. And then
it's really easy to do that. I mean, you look at his stat page, almost all of his career looks the same except for 2017. So you look at the stat page, and knowing nothing about Marcell Ozuna, you say, okay, he had a really good 2017, but the other years are who he is. That's not really true.
Right.
Ozuna took a real step forward in 2017, and the shoulder injury muffled it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think the average could be a little lower, but otherwise, I'm with you on Ozuna. And your friend Justin Upton is here. He's somebody who is just, he is what he is. He's really solid. I almost feel like he's slightly underrated. We got him that year in labor mix that we won, but I just look at Upton's numbers every year, and I'm like, he's like a lock for 30 home runs. The average kind of bounces around, the steals kind of bounce around, but at least steal seven or eight bases, and he's just good. He's just kind of a solid buy to me where he sits.
Yeah, and I think you could say that he doesn't have a track record. I think you could say the same thing about George Springer. He's kind of falling into that category.
He's starting to, yeah.
Guy who people thought was going to be just an absolute superstar, mm-hmm. and didn't quite get there, but is still really good. And it's tough to fight that confirmation bias that Justin Upton somehow has been disappointing in his career. He's been really good, and yeah. So is George Springer. And it's unfair that they still have to carry those expectations when at this point we know the players that they are, and we should be able to appreciate the players that they are.
I mean, it's a buying opportunity, though, and that was what we identified in labor for. I can't believe it's been 4 years, but that's what we identified in labor 4 years ago with Upton. And you're right, like that's this year feels like the year to me that Springer. You're not going to be a big bargain. People know who he is, but he's going to be a slight bargain. He's going to be that player that people sleep on a little bit, and you grab like half a round or a round ahead of everybody else. And yeah, I'm with you there. So let's move on. The three-star tier, and this is a long tier. This is one I said I'd have to kind of go through quickly. We're not going to talk about everybody here, obviously, but I'll start. David Dahl, Andrew McCutchen, Michael Brantley, Victor Robles, A.J. Pollock, Eddie Rosario, not Ahmed. I almost said Freddie Peralta because I'm looking at pitchers already, but David Peralta, Ender Inciarte, Stephen Piscotty, Austin Meadows, Eloy Jimenez, Aaron Hicks, Ian Desmond, Hunter Renfro, another one of your friends, Kyle Schwarber, Jesse Winker, Nomar Mazara, Brandon Nimmo, Ryan Braun, Harrison Bader, Byron Buxton, Billy Hamilton, Adam Eaton, and Domingo Santana. This is an interesting tier. There's a lot of variability here in terms of the upside and the downside, in my opinion, of most of these players. Like, there aren't too many flat players in this tier. Like, Steven Piscotty is one, but there aren't too many players where I'm like, yeah, he's definitely middle of the road. It's more, I don't want to say boom or bust, but it's more there's some fluidity.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here.
Who would you say in this tier has the best chance of maybe like breaking into, let's say, being a top 10 outfielder, being the person that you look at and go, yeah, this player could put it all together and be a top 10 outfielder when the dust settles?
Victor Robles.
Yeah, that'd be my choice too. I mean, he's somebody our former colleague, George Bissell loved Robles. He wrote it in retrospect, an ill-fated piece. I mean, to be fair, it was because of injury, but that Robles could, outperform Acuna last year. But Victor Robles is really, from a fantasy perspective, especially, has a potential to be really, really good.
Yeah, the thing about Robles is that the injuries are real and they are a risk. You know, I would certainly label him as a player who I would draft not expecting to play 155 games, but he's got pop. He's got a lot of speed. He's he could easily steal 30 to 35 bases if he finds himself towards the top of that Nationals lineup at some point during the season. He could score a bunch of runs. There is very little that Victor Robles can't do on baseball diamond. That said, due to injury, he has not had the major league time that you would have expected he would have had at this point. And even beyond that, I mean, Robles still has not, he's played 40 games at AAA, and he's played less than 40 games at AA. So you're talking about someone still, even though he's been around for a while, in our hearts, he has less than 80 games of experience in the upper minors. And in the majors, he's got very, very sort of sporadic experience outside of a couple weeks in September. So I think there's a very real possibility that he can struggle. There's a very real possibility that he could get hurt. But if you're betting on talent, he is a fantastic bet to make.
Yeah, somebody else here that if he's healthy, that I really like, and, different profile. I know you have liked him too in the past. Jesse Winker. We saw what he did last year before the injury. He was getting on base, it was half a season, but he's getting on base over 40% of the time. And, some of the other stats weren't quite there. We know he doesn't run. The home run power wasn't there. But Winker's one of those people I like as a player. And I just feel like the rest of it's going to come around enough for fantasy if he gets the opportunity, where I'm not really worried too much, about like if he hits 30 home runs or, if he hits 300. I'm more willing to bet on the player here and just kind of hope that it comes along otherwise.
Yeah, no, I think that is all very fair.
Are you still high on Kyle Schwarber? I know how you felt about him in the past. Okay, can you explain? Again, you're preaching the choir, but can you explain to our listeners why?
Why do I like Kyle Schwarber? You would think, as there are more sort of players like Kyle Schwarber, that naturally the enthusiasm for him would go down slightly. We'll start with the drawbacks. So Schwarber is not going to get 550 at bats. He may not get 500. This is sort of the biggest issue I have with him, and which is why I absolutely agree with him being a three-star outfielder, even though I wish the Cubs would play him more. But Schwarber has more upside in batting average than he gets credit for. He's not a low strikeout guy, but he is someone who is definitely capable of being a 260 to 270 hitter. And he's certainly shown that he's got 30 home run power. You know, he's going to have opportunities in that lineup to drive in runs. He's going to, you know, the sort of the flip side of the way that he's used is that he's going to be used in slightly more advantageous situations on a per at bat basis than some other players will. He'll be used in, as a replacement late in games, pinch hitter. He'll be used, he'll be kind of spelled when there's a tough left-handed reliever that comes into the game. But I do still believe in the talent that can drive him to be a 260 hitter with 30 to 35 homers. And, you know, that really doesn't, it's really at that point, just then the number of at bats that separates him from, say, like Rhys Hoskins from a fantasy perspective. And, you know, that gap is real because that at bat gap is real, but on a talent perspective, he's really quite good.
Yeah, no, I mean, and the thing about Schwarber, it's so funny, you know, people kind of talk about his disappointment. He's hit 56 home runs the last 2 years. Like he can hit. Like there's no doubt about that aspect of it. It is just the tough, you know, getting the plate appearances, and you know, even on the upside, he's probably not hitting you. You talked about Gallo, like Schwarber's probably not hitting above 260. Like that's just not something that's going to be in the cards for him.
Yeah, no, probably not.
I mean, yeah, you know, Babb is funny. He could have that weird year where he hits 270, 275, 280. But yeah, I wouldn't bet on it. So should we have the Billy Hamilton conversation now?
Do you want to close the three-star talk with the Billy Hamilton conversation, or should we do that and then go back?
Let's do one more outfielder or a couple more outfielders here before we do Hamilton. So someone I have a question about, you know, when we talked about Conforto, Brandon Nimmo, I love Brandon Nimmo as a Mets fan, and I'm sure you do too, but it feels to me like there's not much of a fantasy ceiling here. Do you think there can be more for him in, like, you know, from a roto perspective in 2019, or is what he did last year kind of about as good as it gets?
No, he's like a shitty Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah, I hate to say that, but well,
I mean that in the nicest way possible, because I do really like Brandon Nimmo as a player.
Yeah, too.
But it's the same idea, right? The, you know, where Benintendi was not going to be a top five outfielder, but he's basically a lock to be a top 20. You shift all those down 30 spots and you're basically at Brandon Nimmo. I don't think I think there's very little chance that Brandon Nimmo is a top 30 outfielder, but I think there's a pretty poor chance that he's not a top, you know, 45 outfielder. Yeah. So you're again paying for the floor. You're paying for I think what he did. He doesn't have the track record that Andrew Benintendi has for his level of performance. But you know, I think around 20 homers and, you know, 5 to 10 steals and a 270-ish average, I think is totally attainable.
You know, it's just weird. A guy with a, you know, 917 OPS in the second half and stopped running, didn't hit home runs. It just such a weird profile. It's one of those profiles where, like, he was really good, and I have faith in him being a solid citizen for the Mets for years. But yeah, there's no ceiling there for fantasy, at least not the kind of ceiling where I feel like he's going to break into the four-star tier. Yeah. Yeah, so before we move to Beham, is there anyone? Well, I think the other player I wanted to ask you about was Byron Buxton. I mean, we know why he's ranked here. We know he could be a four-star player. I still hold out hope. Again, you know, we're talking about hearts, you know, my heart. But, I mean, what do we make of him at this point? Like, we really have had a lot to look at by now. I know he's young, but we really have had a lot to look at for Byron Buxton in terms of his career.
We have. we have, but... I mean, it's in there. And the great thing about ranking Buxton as a three-star guy is that there's almost no chance he finishes as a three-star guy. He's basically going to be either a four-star guy or a one-star guy by the end of the season. And I can't give up on a profile like Buxton's. I can't. It's not in me.
Well, he's a weird player in like a 12-team mix. I want to take him because if he doesn't pan out, I cut him in a month. Whereas an AL only, I'm setting a cap on him because I can't do what I saw people do in the expert leagues last year and pay in the upper 20s and get nothing.
No, and I'm starting my prep for AL labor, and my bid is not going to be particularly high for Buxton for. You know, for that reason, I mean, although you get the flip side of that in AL only, where even if he's not great and you just think he's going to play, he will run. I mean, if he gets 350 at bats, I think he'll steal 20 bases, and that's not nothing. But so I don't think there's. I don't think there's a risk of him returning what he returned last year. I think that is a bridge.
Well, he was hurt, and you know, it was weird. Like, he was hurt last year, and the Twins played him while he was hurt. Like, he clearly wasn't right, and then they sent him down. So, yeah, assuming all that weirdness doesn't happen this year, I do agree that there's kind of a different floor with him, or enough of a floor that. You could see like 20 to 25 steals, even if he does like nothing else.
I mean, he's for all the talk of him being this colossal bust, he's in 2017, he hit 16 homers and stole 29 bases and hit above 250. I mean, we're not that far removed from him being a very good fantasy outfielder.
Yeah, and he, you know, in real life, and it matters, he can play defense, and that matters to the Twins. I mean, it matters to their pitchers, and the organization is invested in Byron Buxton succeeding. I mean, I have to say, I had him a couple places last year, so I'm a little wary, and unless he falls, I probably won't have him, but I could see in an industry league in particular, him falling where enough people are like, I don't want to be laughed at. I don't want to take him. And I agree with you. There's a price probably in the high teens in like AL only, for example, where if he's sitting there, I'm not going to say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just won't start with a two.
Right. So Billy Hamilton, what's, you know, speaking of.
Wait, can I get one more thing in before we go to Billy Hamilton?
Yeah, go ahead.
Seconds. But I know a lot of the early season talk is bullshit, and there's a lot of stuff going around that no one should ever listen to, but I'm getting the tingly feeling about Ryan Braun this year, and not because I have nerve damage in my thumb, but because I don't particularly know why. I mean, players talk about changing their approach and their swing plane all the time. This isn't new, but it's like the same spidey sense that I had around Ryan Zimmerman 2 years ago. And I have a feeling I'm going to own Ryan Braun in way too many places this year. But I think that I like his chances of actually bouncing back and being close to a top 20 outfielder.
My thing with Braun is if he stays healthy, which has been the if with him, he's going to hit 25 to 30 home runs, and he'll probably still steal enough bases where you're not getting nothing. And that's kind of, I feel like it comes down to the health. Like he's been relatively productive when he's been on the field, and he just hasn't been on the field nearly as much the last two seasons.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he could have that year where, you know, at the age of 35, he's not super old. You know, he could have that year where he gets 550 plate appearances and hits 25 home runs. I could see it. It's not out of the realm of possibility. He's a really talented player who, you know, is going to fall short of that inevitable Hall of Fame conversation, PED, you know, suspension aside. But I think we forget how good he was or how great he was, you know, in his prime.
Yeah, I think that 25 home run number might be light. I think if he plays, I think if he actually does play that much, I think he might be looking at 30 to 35 homers from Braun.
Yeah,
I don't think he'll get that many at bats. But
I mean, my thing for me is if he's healthy, 25 is the floor, and that's not a bad floor for a player being drafted where he's being drafted.
Absolutely not.
So be him.
So Billy Hamilton.
Can he steal 60 again?
Yes, he can.
Okay, well.
See, now, when I take a one category speed buy, I want him to be a. Yeah, I want him to be a real one category speed guy. Like there's not a number that he could steal that would surprise me. They are going to run like crazy in Kansas City, and they're never gonna get on base, and it won't matter. He might steal more bases than he scores runs. There's no motivation for them, not him and Alberto Mondesi. I mean, I know I wasn't on that episode of the show, but there is no reason the Royals will not run every opportunity they have.
Yeah, as you might imagine, Zach was very conservative on Mondesi. I like Mondesi better than I'd say the other people in the industry do, but not as much as the NFBC crowd does. Like I won't get him at that NFBC price, but I think Mondesi's ADP is about 35 or maybe 40. And I have Mondesi at probably around 50 in a draft ranking, like where, you know, I could see him doing that, but yeah, Billy Hamilton, you know, cause that's who we're talking about. I don't want to predict over 60 just because he's never done that. And, you know, we've seen this with the Reds. Like, so 2016 was his best year in terms of his on-base percentage. He got on base 32% of the time, and he stole 58 bases. And, you know, some of that was injuries, you know, some of it was him missing time. But that's part of the problem, too, is that with the way he plays, I don't want to say he always misses time, but there's a little more risk. There's a little more of that chance he gets banged up, that he misses a couple games here, a couple games there. And yep. I'm not knocking Billy Hamilton. I do agree with your premise. The Royals have nothing to lose. You know, unlike say even the Mariners with Malik Smith, there's really nobody else there who's going to take playing time away from Billy Hamilton. I think my big concern is just with him being in the nine hole. I know in theory that, you know, it's the AL, he could run. It's not like the Reds where, you know, the pitcher gets on base in front of him or the inning's ending or there's, you know, something else going on. But that's my reluctance. Like I'm seeing more like 40 to 45 as the potential. And I do think that Hamilton at this point, Rob Silver in his piece today on ADP and outfielders, Hamilton is oddly undervalued right now. Maybe not a lot, but he's undervalued.
He definitely is. I don't think it's a lock that he's going to stay in the number nine spot, although it's absolutely a consideration. The one thing I will say about Hamilton, and this is completely counterintuitive to what we think when we talk about fantasy value and park factors, Billy Hamilton is really helped by going from Cincinnati to Kansas City. And I'll tell you why. Cincinnati is a bandbox. Kansas City, their outfield is huge. And Billy Hamilton is not going to be someone who hits more than two or three home runs. But with outfielders more spread out, you have a better chance of him getting hits to drop in when he hits it beyond the infield every once in a while. And, you know, I think that I don't think it's an enormous difference, but I think you could see, you know, a 10 to 15 point bump up in batting average for Hamilton just for being in a more vast park.
Yeah, and he's not a big strikeout guy. Like, I think people think about Hamilton and assume he's a, because he looks like a mess up there sometimes, that he's a 30-35% strikeout hitter. He's not that guy. His rate did go up last year, but it went up to 24%, which is not, you know, it's not in that awful range where you're like, oh my gosh, he never makes contact. Like, he makes contact, and you're right. Like, he's somebody who, when he makes contact and it's not a pop up or a fly ball, good things happen.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it was a little approach driven also, because his strikeouts went up a little bit, but his walks went up also.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, in the first half, and I'm looking at this now, it was, the approach was the first half. I think his walks and strikeouts both spiked. And then as the season went along, he kind of went back to doing what he was doing before. And yeah, I'm right about that. He had a 10% walk rate and 25% or 26% strikeout rate in the first half. And those numbers dropped in the second half.
Yeah. And his batting average went up in the second half, but yeah. I mean, to 245, but yeah, yes, it's, you know, there was definitely an approach change going on. And, you know, he was not in the greatest situation in Cincinnati last year, in terms of playing time, in terms of sort of, in terms of having guaranteed at bats. But I think he's going to be in a more comfortable position in Kansas City this year. And I think, whatever. I love Billy Hamilton.
You're convincing me. You're convincing me to move him up. Well, according to the PFM, he earned 20 and only last year. Like, that's the thing about Hamilton, is he earns, and that's a separate argument. I know there's I see systems that show him as negative in 12 team mixed, and that's just not true. Like, those steals are worth something.
Yep, they are.
All right, so two star, and we've been going for a while, so we're gonna not cut this short, but kind of be.
Oh, but these are the boring guys to talk about. I mean, that was
we'll
pop into a couple of them.
There's like two or three here that I find interesting, so we'll talk about those. So two star, Kevin Pillar, Jackie Bradley Jr., Kevin Kiermaier, Ramon Laureano, Corey Dickerson, Framil Reyes, Odubel Herrera. One of your favorites, Shin-Soo Chu, Scott Schebler, Steven Souza, Randall Grichuk, Jock Peterson, Brett Gardner, Jay Bruce. These are some boring names. Nick Williams, Avisail Garcia, and Jose Martinez. So who are the exciting names in this tier for you?
The exciting names in this tier. I still hold out some hope for Jock Peterson as a... as sort of a, you know, not a fantasy superstar, but as someone who performs like a member of the three-star tier. You know, he's got the same sort of playing time situation that Schwarber has. And, you know, I don't think his natural talent is all that far behind. He'll get platooned, he'll get, you know, sheltered against left-handed pitchers, but, you know, on talent, he is capable of hitting 270 with 25 homers, and yeah, you know, that'll certainly play from his spot.
He's hit 25 home runs in two of the last three seasons, and I think if you ask somebody without looking what his like numbers were, and even me, who, you know, obviously follows intently, I would have guessed he was a 15 home run hitter. Like he's kind of underrated just because we think he's a disappointment and we look at him as a part timer, but the power is definitely there.
It absolutely is. And this is another guy. It's almost the exact same thing that happened to George Springer, which is that Peterson had that one just stupid season in the minors where he went 30-30 and everyone thought, oh, he's going to be the next, you know, Matt Kemp or the next you know, next guy who's going to come up and just dominate all five categories. And, you know, he didn't. He doesn't run, but it's okay. I mean, like you said, he has hit 25 home runs in three of the last four seasons. And his 2017 season where he didn't was he only got 273 at bats. I think he has a very good chance to hit 25 homers again. And I think there is upside in the batting average. I mean, his strikeout rate was not high last year. The 85 strikeouts in 443 plate appearances. And, you know, that's notably down from 2016. It's notably down from 2015. I think there's a real chance that there's a 270, 275 average in his future.
That's possible. There's two other names for me here that pop out as, you know, Jay Bruce, we're not going to talk about, you know, we know what he is. Ramon Laureano. That's a name to me that's interesting because he just came out of nowhere last year. And, you know, I was reading his BP annual comment. It was talking about the fact that, you know, the Astros, you know, JD Martinez a couple of years ago, the Astros don't miss on players. Like, they don't give up on people. And they gave up on Laureano. Do you think that Laureano is real? Can he, you know, we know he's not going to do what he did last year for the A's on a seasonal pace, but can he be a 2020 player?
I mean, I love the fact that Pecota basically projects him to be a 2020 player.
Well, that's why I'm asking, yeah.
I know. Look, far be it for me to question Pecota. I go into auctions and look at numbers with my own flavor, but look, if I'm going to look at a projection system, it sure is shit going to be Pecota. And it makes me look twice when I see that he's got this projection. And, you know, I think that it has a point. And I say it because I like to imagine that I still to this day imagine that it's like just this big, like hulking 7-foot-tall computer with glasses that just sits in the corner of our office plugging away, just spewing out projections for everyone. But you know, Laureano is a hitter, and you know, the A's are going to give him all the playing time he can handle unless he falls on his face. He's good defensively. I don't think there's a ton of upside there, but I think there's a pretty decent shot he does come close to going 2020.
Yeah, and really, if you look at so Pecota is more robust than the other systems out there, but not very much. Like, you're looking, every other system has him at about 15-15. And if that's what you're getting, like if you're essentially getting like Kevin Pillar at this price, that's fine. The only places that I won't be in or close to in a Laureano is if there is some analyst who's looking at the PFM or Pecota and being a strict pricer. And those people do exist, so and that's fine. I won't get him. But yeah, I believe enough in Laureano where I'm not afraid if I get him where I'm like, oh yeah, he's gonna fall apart. Yeah. So the third, you know, interesting name here. And we can certainly talk about other people if you want to. We can talk about your love for the perennially undervalued Chew. I you know, we know that. But Franmil Reyes.
Oh, no.
He's somebody who was up and down. At one point, just looked completely lost. And all of a sudden, went on a power binge. 32 home runs between the majors and the minors. So, legit power source, or is this a pop-up guy who's going to fall apart?
I will have absolutely no shares of Franmil Reyes this year. Yeah. I can guarantee you that. It's not that I don't think there's power there, but I mean, like, what's the is are people really thinking that there's a difference between him and Hunter Renfro?
Yeah, I think people
Hunter Renfro? Why do people not care about Hunter Renfro?
Reyes is shiny new toy, and Renfro, we have how many plate appearances that we've looked at now? And it's funny you mention that, because I believe I have Renfro ranked ahead, not by a lot, but I have Renfro ranked ahead of Reyes. And I have Renfro ranked with Schwarber. And, you know, some of my mentality with Renfro is like, well, you know, he's kind of a similar profile to Schwarber. You know, the home runs are a little different. The average is a little different, but that's kind of what he's done. Like he's, and he hasn't played 100, you know, full season, just like Schwarber. Whereas with Reyes, I think what people are doing is they're looking at that half a season or that big burst, which was what, like a month or a month and a half. And they're saying, yeah, that's, you know, the second half, you know, 180 plate appearances, 10 home runs, 315 batting average. I think people are thinking he's going to hit 30 home runs and hit 280. That's what I think.
Yeah. I take that back. I had the numbers flipped in my head. Like I, for some reason I thought Renfro was being drafted where Jock Peterson is being drafted. Jock Peterson is being drafted right around 300 overall. Renfro is being drafted ahead of Franmil Reyes,
but they're close.
I would take Peterson over Franmil Reyes.
I would too. I just feel like, you know, I watched a lot of Reyes last year. I had him in tout for a while. He's going to go through streaks like that last year that are great and you're happy you have him. And he's going to go through streaks where you're angry and you're like, oh, why did I take this guy where I took him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't think there's much separation between him and the guys that are going in sort of the 275 to 325 range. And Reyes is going the late, early 200s.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being the voice of reason, because so far everything I've heard about Reyes has been buy. And I don't have anything against him. I just feel like he's being pumped up too far.
He definitely is, but I mean,
anyone?
Just the guy who loves Billy Hamilton.
Guy who what?
I'm just the guy who loves Billy Hamilton.
That's going to be the title of this episode. We can have yet another one of these. So, anyone else in two star? Like I said, this is really a pretty boring or reliable group. Like Kevin Pillar is like a good example. Like he's 15-15, but like even for that, you're like, okay.
Not really. I don't think anyone here is interesting enough to talk about this deep into a podcast.
All right, so let's quickly do the one star and the what we used to do, which is, you know, our like value pick. Cedric Mullins, Trey Mancini, Max Kepler, Manuel Margot, Jake Bowers, Daniel Palka, Franchi Cordero, Lewis Brinson, and Billy McKinney. And I specifically went, for the most part, with younger players here. Nick Markakis in the right format definitely belongs here. He's a solid earner, but, you know, whoop-dee-woo. So who of these players are off the board is your one-star value pick?
So I am going to talk about I did miss him on here, right? I want to talk about Kyle Tucker.
You did not miss him.
Can we talk about Kyle Tucker?
Sure.
I don't think Kyle Tucker is all that different from the prospects that we're putting in the three star tier. He is not going to break camp with the Astros, barring something really, really strange. But you know, there is just so much to like about Kyle Tucker. And I give a shout out to Rob Silver, who put this in his early ADP piece that came out on Monday. But because of the, and this is really important, because of the positional flexibility that the Astros have, literally anything going wrong for the Astros will result in Kyle Tucker being in the majors and hitting. He literally listed out everything in the article, which I think is hilarious. But short of an injury to their catcher, I mean, that is the only position player that could get hurt on the Astros and not result in them calling up Kyle Tucker. You know, presuming that Tucker does his part and, you know, and right. stays healthy and hits where he is, which is, I think, a very reasonable assumption. But Tucker is a, you know, an elite, elite fantasy prospect. And he is, I think, some way or another, he's going to get 400 plus at bats this year. And I think he could easily return top 30, 35 outfielder money. What, how do you say that? It's been so long since I've been on the fantasy podcast. I don't even know how to say that anymore.
That sounds about right. I turned top
35 outfield value. I'm correcting myself here. But yes.
It really does come down to opportunity. You can't look at that 72 plate appearance sample last year and extrapolate anything out of it. He didn't really get a full crack. He wasn't playing full time. I do agree. Like, Tucker's somebody where if he's up in May and he busts through the door, you've got a serious bargain based on where he's going. You know, the only risk with Tucker is, for whatever reason, everybody's healthy, performs, et cetera, and he's up in the second half. That to me is the only risk with Tucker. Yeah. And even at his price, it's not really much of a risk.
No. He's the price hasn't caught up with the talent yet. And I assume it will by the time we get to mid-March. But
yeah,
I'm hoping it doesn't until after Labor.
Well, it might not, just because again, in some ways, like, if Tucker had come up in September and hit like 320, and didn't have a space in the lineup, we'd all know. Like, we'd all be looking at it being like, well, it's just tick, tick, tick. It's a matter of time. That bad small sample is what I think has put doubt into people's minds. I think people are thinking AJ Reed, you know, they're looking at the Astros being loaded, but that's false. So, like, Tucker, yeah. Right. Tucker is damn good, and he's 22 years old. Like, he's not like some 25 year old prospect who the clock is ticking. Like, he's going to break through at some point, and it's just a question of when.
Yes. And these types of players, and Tucker is this type of prospect, these types of prospects don't get blocked. I mean, you look at Kyle Tucker's 72 plate appearance sample from last year, but then you look at what he did in AAA, and he hit 332, 400, 590 with 24 homers and 20 steals in 100 games.
Yeah.
And hi, that's Kyle Tucker. You know, that's what you get. Not the whatever crap he did in the majors in basically no playing time.
Yep. So, we've mentioned the PFM and Pecota a few times. So I want to talk about someone else that it's high on, and that's Cedric Mullins. So, you know, it's funny. I'm not even the biggest Mullins fan. I just like the opportunity. I like the fact that he's going to play in Baltimore. That team looks terrible, by the way. That rotation just makes me sad. But Mullins is going to play. He can run more than he did in the majors last year. He had two steals and 191 plate appearances, and his projection is not that far off in the PFM and Pecota from Laureano's. And if I remember correctly, Mullins just does not cost. I mean, he's not going for nothing. He's going inside the top 300, but that's just not much of a cost. Like, Laureano is going 100 picks sooner. I get why. Laureano actually performed in the majors, and that's part of that price. But Mullins just inside the top 300 for me is a nice pick where it's like, well, if he works out, great. If he doesn't work out in a 12 or even a 15 team league, I'm going to cut him in a month.
Yeah. And really, who else are they going to play? I mean,
well, yeah,
they're going to give him as much rope as they possibly can.
Yeah. There was some talk of them bringing back Jones, but it doesn't, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Mullins is going to play. Yeah. If there's a drawback to that, they're going to give him as much rope is that, you know, he could be hitting 200 after a couple months and you're dealing with that. But again, in anything but an AL only, you don't have Mullins on your roster at that point. So I like the upside here compared to, you know, some of the other players in this tier. Just a nice pick because of the power and speed potential.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, anything else before we wrap up?
Yeah, you want to talk about Billy Hamilton for another hour?
Why don't we do that on the secret podcast that
listeners
can get to?
Yeah. Please rate and review our secret podcast.
We should really have one of those. I think that was Tino, which is anyone doing Tino at this point, or is that like just hasn't happened?
No. Well, Craig left.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we gotta get Tino back up and running.
I like doing podcasts.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we'll take a break and we'll come back and wrap up. This has been episode 185 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball perspectives podcast. Once again, I'm Mike Gianella, and you've been listening to our rants and reviews of outfielders. Joining me this week was Brett Sayre. Don't forget, we'll have our labor podcast next week. We'll talk about Labor Mix and Zach Steinhorn and the team he drafted, who he likes, doesn't like, how he feels, and we'll have our little intro, and it'll be interesting to hear what he did versus what he said. So once again, I'm Mike Gianella. With me is Brett Sayre, and behind the glass, Jim Mach Ramos, and we will hopefully have you listening to us next week. Goodbye.
Thanks for having me, Mike.